Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, and podcasts of prior shows are also available on either of those websites. So if there's a particular topic you might be interested in learning more information about, you can go to the website, scroll through the prior shows, and click and listen. Today is July 13th, 2016. The markets were mixed today. The Dow closing up at 18,372, the NASDAQ down at 5,005, and the S&P up at 2,152. Tonight I'm talking about employer retirement plans and making sure you understand them. If I have additional time, I will discuss some other employer retirement benefits that may be available to you. There is a lot of information and a lot of different kinds of employer retirement plans. So plenty of information to cover. I may end up giving an overview. I'll see how much detail I can get into, of course. But you should know we are live, and if you have questions, you can call in, and I'll do my best to answer the questions. Lori's in the studio with us this evening as well. She'll answer the calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can also email questions to the website yourfinancialchoices.com. So tonight we are talking about understanding your employer retirement plans. Do you think you know what you have? So what do I mean by that? Sometimes people think they understand what the benefits are that their employer is providing, and without sometimes looking at all of the details, you may not understand what they are. And I think it's very important to understand the details. So we're going to give some big picture summaries of the different kinds of employer retirement plans, and then kind of drill down a little bit more. So not all retirement plans are the same. Quick highlights, and we'll be talking about employer plans and IRAs and Roth IRAs. I will talk about next week. So IRAs and Roth IRAs, probably simple IRAs and SEPs as well. I'll probably try to put that all in for next week. So you may have any of the following employer-provided retirement plans. We have retirement plans called a 401k. Where does that name come from? It's the Internal Revenue Code section that governs these employer plans. These are called qualified plans. They're under ERISA, so there's some governmental oversight on these plans, certain rules and restrictions that will apply to them. So a 401k plan is a typical retirement plan that we see from employers. There's different versions of them. We can have a safe harbor 401k. We can have a profit sharing 401k. We can have a 401k with a profit sharing element. So there's different versions of the 401k. I'll talk about how do you know which one you have in a moment. We can also have a Roth feature on a 401k. For folks who might be working at nonprofits or hospitals, things like that, you might have, or universities, you might have a 403B. That's the code section governing those. In the old days, there were probably more differences between the 403B and the 401K than we have today. And there are some differences that folks need to be aware of between a 401K and a 403B. Once you reach a certain age, there's certain catch-up provisions that we have generally, but 403Bs have even some additional catch-up provisions that are available beyond what the 401K catch-up provisions are. We have ESOPs, Employer Stock Ownership Plans. We're not seeing those as much as we used to. For folks in the area, that would be PPL had an ESOP plan. Air Products has employer stock in their 401K. I don't believe it's a separate ESOP plan, so to speak, but employer stock in a retirement plan. And those are considered qualified plans as well. Then, as I mentioned, SEP, Simple IRAs, those are employer plans that I think I'll try to talk about next week. We have 457B governmental plans and tax-exempt plans. That's more around deferred comp, available for government and tax-exempt entities. Employer plans sometimes provide a deferred compensation option. Sometimes there's a supplemental executive retirement plan, bonus plans. We have traditional pension plans. Those we call a defined benefit. The other ones I was talking about would be like a defined contribution, 401K, 403B. Those are defined contribution. A defined benefit is your traditional pension plan. We call it a defined benefit because the benefit that you're going to receive from that plan is defined. It's a specific dollar amount based on how long you've worked somewhere and how long or what your salary was and actuarial tables and life expectancies and things like that. But there's a specific dollar amount you're going to get. Whereas the defined contribution plans, there's a specific dollar amount you can put into the plan, and depending on how it's invested, the amount that you eventually get to take out could be very different. It could vary, all right? A cash balance plan is like a traditional pension plan, similar to that with, it's kind of like a phantom account that gets set up that's similar to a pension, and typically there is a lump sum option on that. That's a little bit of the difference between a traditional and a cash balance. I want to talk about important things to know about the plans tonight. And one of the most important things that you should be aware of when we're talking about employer benefits, whether it is retirement accounts or any other kind of benefits, is there should be an employee benefit booklet that you may receive. Or if there's a 401k or a 403b, you should have a summary plan description. And you want to make sure that you keep that handy. Sometimes there'll be a condensed version that's given to employees. That summary plan description is a document provided by the plan administrator that includes a plain language description of important features of the plan. For example, when employees begin to participate in the plan, how service and benefits are calculated, when benefits become vested. We'll talk about what vesting means in a bit. So when benefits become vested, when payment is received and in what form, and how to file a claim for benefits. Participants must be informed of material changes either through a revised summary plan description or in a separate document called a summary of material modifications. So each year, participants in 401ks, for example, that's typically what most of us might be in when we're employed with bigger companies. So 401ks is usually what we're looking at. You should be getting a summary plan description regularly. All right. And when we talk about years of service, it's the time an individual has worked in a job covered by the plan. It's used to determine when an individual can participate and vest and how they can accrue benefits in the plan. And generally, a year of service requires that an employee accrues at least 1,000 hours of service over a 12 month consecutive period. And that can vary by plan as well. And we'll talk about vesting when we come back, and then a little bit more about 401ks and how they work. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. The phone number this evening is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We're talking about retirement plans, employer retirement plans, and making sure that you understand the differences. One of the reasons why I also think it's important to understand the differences is because so often people talk with each other, friends talk with each other, siblings talk with each other, your neighbors, everybody talks, and you might be talking about very different plans, not realizing it. One might say, oh, you can do this, and the other would say, oh, you could do this, and you have to make sure that you review your own plan and that you understand it to make sure that whatever the assumptions are, that they actually apply to your plan. So, for example, let me talk for a moment about 401ks. A 401k, as I said, employer-provided plan, typically it's set up by an employer to help their employees save for their retirement. These really came into being, I can't tell you when, but when employers were getting away from providing pension plans. So because the employers were no longer going to provide a pension plan to people to pay them in their retirement, they went this other direction saying, here, you save for your own retirement plan, your own retirement. And instead of us providing you a pension, we're going to also put money in the 401k. Now, employers don't have to put money in the 401k necessarily. You have to look at your summary plan document. There are certain employer plans called safe harbor plans. If your employer has a safe harbor plan, they are putting money into your retirement plan automatically, whether you do or not. And that is 3%. 3% safe harbor. Why employers do that is it helps them avoid administrative costs that they would incur in a regular 401k plan, because there's all kinds of testing that has to be done. So the IRS says, hey, employers, you can provide your employees with this retirement plan, and they're going to get some tax-favored treatment, meaning if they put money into their retirement account, it's going to be tax deferred. It's on a pre-tax basis. If they put $10,000 into the 401k, they don't have to pay taxes on it until they eventually take it out. And there's lots of other guidelines around that, but that's in the simplest form. They have to follow certain rules. So for that benefit, then we want to make sure that we're following the summary plan document. And if we have a safe harbor, we're treating everyone equally. If we don't have a safe harbor, the IRS's concern was that highly compensated employees would be more favored. So what ends up happening is there's testing that has to be done. The IRS says to get these tax advantages on these plans, we're not going to let you, you know, skew everything to the highly compensated people. So we're going to do testing and make sure that it's fair. Well, if we promise to do 3% safe harbor amount, the IRS says, okay, you're treating everyone fairly. We don't have to do as much testing. So it saves on administrative cost. There can be a feature on the 401k plan called profit sharing where an employer may also opt to put additional amounts into a 401k for their employees if they, you know, are profitable. And it could be that it's discretionary, meaning even if they're profitable, the employer may or may not have to put money in. All of this would be described in your summary plan document. So you want to look at the summary plan document. Is this a regular 401k? Is it a safe harbor 401k? Is it a safe harbor 401k with a profit sharing feature? So a number of features. The other feature that was recently added several years ago is a Roth feature. So you heard me say there's certain advantages to 401ks, which include tax deferral. So I could put money into my 401k and not pay tax on it. And that's very attractive, especially for people as they get in higher tax brackets. Well, let's say I'm in a really low tax bracket. I'm just starting out. I'm, you know, 25 years old and I'm in a 15% tax bracket, but I'm still living at home and I have tons of cash flow available to me. And I'm up and coming, and I know I'm going to make a ton of money in 10 years. I'm going to be on the fast track, and I'm going to be making tons of money, and I know I'll be in the highest tax bracket. But today, I'm just young. I'm starting out. I'm in a low tax bracket. Is there a way that I could save money in a retirement account and not get that tax deferral, because maybe today I don't need it? I don't want the tax deferral. So that's when the IRS came in and said, hey, well, we'll let employers add a Roth 401k feature. That Roth feature says that employees can put money into the Roth part of the 401k, not get the tax deferral, but that money will grow and that piece will come out tax-free when you eventually roll it over to a Roth or retire and take it out of the Roth 401k. Typically, you want to roll that over to a Roth. Because you did not get the tax deferral, the contribution and the earnings are going to come out tax-free on that Roth piece. Now, remember I told you there's a safe harbor 401k, so there might be employers who are putting in a safe harbor contribution. That's not going to go into that Roth part of the plan. That will go into the taxable part of the plan. That'll go into the regular 401k sleeve. The Roth piece and its earnings will stay in the Roth sleeve. The other tax-deferred pieces or the employer contributions will be in the taxable sleeve. When you eventually start making a lot more money, you want to keep an eye on it and watch out for your tax situation, and then let your employer know, hey, I don't want to do the Roth feature anymore. I want to put it into the tax deferred piece. In your summary plan document, it will tell you how often you can do that. I know our plan at work, I can do it like all the time. We can switch in and out every month. I mean, you don't want to make your payroll people crazy, but there may be employer plans that will say you have to do it once a year or twice a year or once a quarter or something like that, where you can make those changes. So you want to make sure you're reading those summary plan documents. And sometimes there's a lot of pages to them and they may look a little complicated, a little overwhelming. There's typically a table of contents, and recall that it is supposed to be plain language, so usually there will be a table of contents at the beginning of the summary plan document, and you can just, the summary plan description, and you can just go to the section that you want to read about. So we talked about a number of different kinds of employer retirement plans, in particular 401k, safe harbor 401k. There could be a profit sharing piece. Don't always count on that. A Roth 401k piece as well. 403Bs are typically what we see at public universities, institutions, education, and 501c3 organizations, which are nonprofits, charitable organizations. So 403b is typically what we see there. Traditionally, we have seen some of those plans move over to 401ks as well. So you might have had a 403b at one point, and now it might have morphed into a 401k. So you may have had an old plan that you could roll over to a self-directed IRA. I'll talk about rolling over retirement plans a little later in the show. If you have questions, I know it's a little complicated, but I think it's all worthwhile and important for people to pay attention to these things. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
Offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking about retirement plans tonight, different kinds, and what you have to pay attention to, and how important that summary plan description document is. So you want to make sure when they hand that out, you put it someplace important, because it may have information in it that would be very important to you. For example, it would tell you when you can take a distribution, at what age. Sometimes there's something called in-service distributions. At what age would you be eligible to do that? So sometimes people will continue to work past maybe 65, and maybe an in-service distribution would be allowed at 59 and a half or 65, even though you're continuing to work for the employer. You want to make sure you understand that could be very important. If you want to take your money out of your 401k and invest it yourself in a rollover IRA, an in-service distribution will allow you to do that. And sometimes people think they have more investment options outside their employer 401k. So you want to look for that. Some people will want to take loans out of their 401k. Well, it will talk about whether or not you can take out a loan and how much you can take. I never recommend anybody do that, but there are cases where you may have to, or it could be for something such as a first home purchase, a principal residence purchase. So there may be times where it might be nice to kind of know that you have that available, and it might be just short term, but typically the document will refer to it, and then you want to talk to your the trustee of your 401k and work through with your third-party administrator to set up the loan, know what the terms are, that kind of thing. But some of that will be spelled out in that document. If there's hardship, exceptions and withdrawals, and such items as that. So we talked about 401ks. We talked about the Roth feature, 403bs. Again, sometimes a plan can switch. An employer can have one kind of plan and switch to another plan. So, for example, where I'm working currently, when I first started, there was an employer plan called the Simple IRA. I'll talk about that next week. That's kind of nice for smaller employers. It's pretty simple. That's the name, Simple IRA. Well, we switched from the Simple IRA to the 401k, and many of the employees took the balance in their Simple IRA and rolled it over to a rollover IRA and then started fresh in the 401k. But there were a number of employees that said, I don't want two accounts. I'm happy with the options in the 401k, and they could roll their Simple IRA over into the rollover IRA. All right, there's special rules around Simple, so I don't want to make that sound simpler than it is, but Just be aware when you change plans, you may have an opportunity to roll over older retirement plans into rollover IRAs. You want to weigh the benefits of doing that. 457B governmental and tax-exempt plans, I'm not going to talk about those, but deferred comp is something you want to be aware of. Many people may not have this on their radar when they first start with an employer. It may be in your benefit booklet, they may refer to it, but you need every penny you earn, and you don't need to save taxes maybe because you need the money and you can't afford to defer. Well, maybe you're in year five of being at this employer and maybe now you got raises and promotions and you're making a lot more money and you're paying a lot more in tax and you have cash flow now. You don't need all that money. You may have a deferred comp plan available at work. Some employers have it and probably many more don't. But you want to just make sure that you're aware of what retirement accounts or retirement plans are available to you because it might make sense for you to defer some of your wages into an account. And then when you retire, you would take that out. Again, that would be all described in the document and it would tell you what your options are on the distribution of that deferred comp. Why, you know, we keep talking about deferral, the 401k, you have an opportunity to deferral, the deferred comp, you have an opportunity to defer. Why do we want to defer? Let's go back to if we think we're in a higher tax bracket today than we might be in our retirement, it would make sense for us, if we can afford to, because we have enough other cash flow, we can afford to defer more of our income, not pay tax on it today, because when we retire, we'll be in a lower tax bracket. That's the idea of deferral. And if I defer more money today, let's pretend I defer $10,000 into my retirement account into my 401k. If I'm in a 25% tax bracket and I deferred $10,000, that means I'm not paying taxes on that $10,000. I'm deferring the whole $10,000. If I didn't do that and I took the $10,000 in pay, well, I'm not netting $10,000 today if I don't defer. I'm netting the amount after taxes, which in Pennsylvania, we don't get a deferral for state or local, but we get a deferral for Fed. So in my very simple example of 25%, my paycheck, you know, today with 25% tax on the Fed would be $7,500. By deferring, I'm putting $10,000 in my retirement account. So I'm having that extra money that otherwise would go to taxes. I have that in a retirement account earning money. That's the idea of deferral and compounding and having your money work for you. Now, if my $10,000 grows to $15,000, when I retire, I take $15,000 out. If I'm in the 25% tax bracket at the same time, we still got the benefit of the money earning on that tax, but I might be paying 25% tax. But if I'm in a lower tax bracket because now I'm retired, maybe I'm in a 15% tax bracket. I save 25%. Today I only pay 10. That's a win. So you want to kind of look at your planning opportunities, look what tax brackets you're in, see how all of this works together. And the other item that I think is important for people to think about, too, is what state you're living in. Because a lot of us will defer into our retirement accounts in Pennsylvania. We're paying tax on that money in Pennsylvania and local because we don't get the deferral in Pennsylvania and local. And then we move to a state that taxes our retirement accounts. So Pennsylvania doesn't tax our retirement accounts when we take it out. But when we move to another state, they might. So you want to be careful what state you're working in. Jeff, we have a call on line one. Emily, this is Lori.
Hello, yes.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
Good. How can I help you?
Well, my question is about money that I inherited from a friend who had a retirement account. And okay. She named me as a beneficiary. And when I went to, you know, they said I had to, they made me cash out that account and I paid the tax on it. And then I opened with my retirement company a Roth. So I figured I paid the tax on it. I wanted to put it into a Roth within my account, which is with a big firm.
Mm-hmm.
And my accountant is telling me because it came from, you know, through that path that I have to cash it out in the next 5 years because somehow there's a rule attached to it from the source.
Okay.
But my big retirement firm is saying, no, you don't need to cash it out. So I can't get any answer about what the rules are.
Well, this is a fun question. So let me ask you a couple questions quick. First, the IRA that your friend had, was it a regular IRA?
I believe so. It wasn't like a Roth deferred.
It was a regular IRA, which is
yeah.
why they said when you cashed it out, you had to pay taxes on it. And
right.
But you were the named beneficiary on it. Now,
yes.
Was this at a bank by chance?
It was a government. It was whoever insure or does it for the federal government.
Okay, because one of the things that happens is when you inherit a retirement account, if it was an IRA and you're the named beneficiary, typically, if you do it timely, you can set up a beneficiary IRA. So it would be your friend's name. Let's call her Patty. Patty, for benefit of Emily, beneficiary IRA, and then you can take it out over your life expectancy. That is a regular kind of IRA that you have inherited. So we have to do it as a trustee-to-trustee transfer. You can't take the cash in hand. Once you take the cash in hand, it's distributed, and that beneficiary IRA is all gone, and the stretch IRA feature is all gone. You can't stretch it out over your life expectancy once you take the proceeds. So that's the first thing. So you've already done it. Now, one of the things that happens sometimes is people will have, oops, Emily, I'm at the break. Can I keep going? Okay. So one of the things that happens is sometimes they're in annuities. And sometimes the annuity company might say you can't take it over, and they might make you try to take it out over 5 years or in a lump sum.
Uh-huh.
But generally, if it's an IRA, you could have kept it in a beneficiary IRA, and it would have been Patty IRA for benefit of Emily, you know, inherited IRA. Because now you've cashed it out, you could have done anything you wanted with that money. Let's pretend it's $20,000. When you said you put it into a Roth, the only way, this is if it's your own money now. It doesn't matter anymore that it was an inherited IRA. That story's gone. That that cow left the barn or horse left the barn or whatever. So now it's just what rules will apply to you. So what rules will apply to you? If you have earned income and you're below certain thresholds, you can have fund a Roth IRA, and with what's the limits? I think it's $6,000 if you're over 50. So you can put money into a Roth IRA based on your earned income if you're below certain filing adjusted gross income. So if you're married filing joint and your income's, and don't tell me any income, and your income's under $183,000, you could put money into a Roth, and you could put money into the Roth for your husband. If you're single, then the limitation is, let me tell you, $116,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's just your Roth IRA. That's it. So this whole five-year thing. Oh, so now, one last thing. If your friend had done a conversion of an IRA to a Roth, that's the five-year thing. Or if you put money into the Roth, and you're over 59 and a half, you have to keep the money in the Roth the longer of 5 years or age 59 and a half. So that might be what they're talking about. But you didn't convert. This is a fresh IRA, a Roth IRA. You can always take out your original contributions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did any of that apply?
No.
Of what I said, did any of that make sense?
It made sense. It made sense.
Okay.
So when I went through my... You know, it's a big company that manages our investments, our retirement investments. They said that it qualified and I could just start a Roth. But my accountant is saying because it came from this inherited path, that requirement to take it out in 5 years still applies. And, you know, I don't know better than an accountant or a financial advisor, but...
I
agree with what you said. This money, I paid the tax. It should be free and clear,
yep.
And I could have done anything with it.
Yep.
So
Nope. The only reason the five-year rule applies is if it was a conversion. You have to hold a Roth conversion 5 years.
So because she didn't convert it, my friend.
Right.
It doesn't apply.
No, it doesn't apply. And the other thing with your company that you said, you didn't do this through your employer. You did it through your investment.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, because that's a little different. So you just set up your own Roth IRA. You can always take out the original contributions. Earnings have to stay in at least till age 59 and a half.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, well, that really helps me. Thank you.
Okay, wonderful. Good. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. Folks, we're going to go to our break. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY Lehigh Valley's community NPR station, your source for NPR news, public affairs, and a great mix of hand-picked music. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 79 degrees under scattered showers. Tonight, lows around 72, scattered showers. Thursday, chance of thunderstorms, highs around 91. Friday, the sun returns with sunny skies and highs around 92 degrees. Folks, the time now is 6:36. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. I just want to do one little follow-up to Emily's call in this five-year thing. One of the reason they do that five-year conversion, if someone converts money from an IRA to a Roth and they want you to wait 5 years, it's because they don't want someone taking an IRA that they can't tap because they're not age 59 and a half. There'd be a 10% penalty. So I could get clever and say, hey, I'm not 59 and a half, but I could take this IRA and I could convert it to a Roth and I can take out my original contributions of a Roth because I've already paid tax and I won't have the 10% penalty. So that's what the IRS says on conversions, you have to wait 5 years. So that's where that rule came from. All right. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We're talking about retirement plans. Let me just mention another little clever thing that I saw recently that kind of made me realize this is something I should probably talk about as well because it's not that common. And that is, you may, back to that summary plan description, you may have an employer who allows after-tax deferrals to their 401k. So let's say you've maxed out your deferral, your $18,000. You could do $18,000 a year, $6,000 a catch-up contribution if you're over 50. So let's say you did your, I'm under 50 and I did $18,000. And my employer plan says you can also do after-tax deferrals up to the maximum that the IRS allows, which between employer and employee, and I think it's like $53,000. So if I do $18,000, that would give me another $35,000 of money that could go in there. And let's say my employer puts in $5,000. Then that leaves another $30,000 before we hit the cap. The IRS came in at the end of 2015 and said, if your employer plan provides for after-tax deferrals and between the employer and the employee, you're not there, the employee can put in more after-tax monies. That's another amazing way to save. It might not be something you'd think would make sense. Why would you want to put it in there? I'd rather have it in a in a regular investment account to get qualified dividends and things like that. But what the IRS clarified last year was this after-tax deferral piece of that 401k can be rolled over into a Roth IRA. Big, big, big. All right? So just wanted to point that out. Important to read your plan documents and to see if that might be something that would be applicable to you. Again, we don't see it that often because, number one, the employer has to provide for it, and number two, people don't often have that much extra cash flow to be able to do after-tax money into a 401k. Because you might be limited on when you can get to it, folks. So that's why it has to be, all the circumstances have to be just right to make that work. All right, but I wanted to mention that. Another very important item I want to mention, as my time is running a little short here. I still have time for questions, 610-758-8810. But I want to make sure I mention these. When you get an employer match, you have to be careful to make sure that you're putting in all year long. We have seen where employees will front load their 401k. So if I'm going to put in $18,000 into my 401k and I am a salesman and I get a huge gigantic bonus in March and I say, hey, let's defer that whole bonus into my 401k, the whole kit and caboodle, $18,000. Well, if the employer is matching your contributions each month, you may not get the match to the extent that you would be qualified to do it. So let's pretend they're going to put 3% of your salary in each month, and they put in 3% of your salary in March when you do your bonus, but I'm not sure the bonus would necessarily qualify. Sometimes they don't. You got to read your summary plan description. You may lose the match all the subsequent months. So be careful when you're front loading any kind of employer plans and 401ks if you have a company match. Some other items I want to make sure that we talk about is what to do when you retire. So you want to understand what you have and what your options are. So what you have might be, is it a 401k? Is it an ESOP? Do you have employer stock in your plan? Did you do pre-tax contributions? Did you do after-tax contributions? What can you roll over and what shouldn't you roll over? Do you have any outstanding loans? Outstanding loans can come back to haunt you if you retire with a loan in your 401k. I'll talk about that in a little bit more detail after I kind of give you some things to think about. When we come back in the last segment of the show, I'll talk about some of the details around these. But I want you to start getting this on your radar when you're thinking about when to retire, when you retire and what you have to consider. So outstanding loans, whether you've made pre-tax or after-tax contributions, whether or not you have employer stock in your plan, or do you have a separate ESOP. You want to know what you can roll over, what shouldn't you roll over. And to that point, we're talking about things like after-tax monies that could really muck everything up, or if you have employer stock with a very low cost basis. Those are especially things you want to pay extra attention to before you jump into a rollover. Financial advisors won't always look at these for you. You need to understand it for yourself. If you are someone who already has an IRA, which I know I'm going to talk about IRAs next week, but sometimes people will do these 60-day rollovers. They'll take money out of the IRA. And if they put it back within 60 days, there's no penalty, no tax. Some people get clever and try to do that like every 2 months. That doesn't work. The IRS came down and said you can only do one 60-day rollover within 12 months. I wanted to make sure I mentioned that even though it's outside the 401k discussion. You can only do a 60-day rollover once in 12 months. How you avoid a 60-day rollover problem is you do trustee-to-trustee transfers. Don't take the money in hand. Similar to Emily's story earlier, if she would have taken the account as a beneficiary IRA and said, hey, friends, employer, I want to roll that over into a beneficiary IRA, and friend's employer says, well, where are you going to roll it over? And it might be XYZ brokerage firm. Let me, you know, something like Charles Schwab or TD Ameritrade or Scottrade or something like that. A custodian would set up a beneficiary IRA account for on her behalf, and then she gives the instruction to the employer, if it wasn't an employer plan, and where they send the proceeds. And it goes directly to the trustee to trustee transfer, never comes in her hands. It stays in a beneficiary form. And then she could take things out over her life expectancy. If it was an IRA, the same thing, trustee to trustee transfer, custodian to custodian. You can even transfer the assets that way. In a 401k, they liquidate. All right? So you want to be careful what you do. Don't get so excited for the money, because when you take things out as a beneficiary, you can take it out over your life expectancy. There's a minimum amount. You can always take out the whole thing, but there's a minimum amount, and that helps you manage the taxes a little bit. All right, we can talk more about that next week. Phone number is 610-758-8810. When we come back, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about ESOPs, employer stock, why that's important, and why after-tax money in your retirement accounts is critically important that you pay attention to. Back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Thank you, Jeff. Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. And the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810, or questions could be sent to me via the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. I did say that I was going to tell you what vesting meant, so for people who don't know, let me just go back to that for a moment. If you are in a 401k and I'm putting $10,000 a year into my 401k, those are my contributions, and I'm going to get those back no matter what. Now, considering, though, I may have invested and my value might go down on my investments or it might go up, but those original contributions and the earnings associated with my contributions will be distributed as well or available to me. Where the vesting comes in is the plan will say, if you are an employee and you've only worked for us 1 year and the employer put money into the plan for you, maybe they put in $5,000 or profit sharing of $3,000, something like that. They want to make sure you're going to stay there for a while. So the incentive of a vesting schedule says, hey, people who only stay a year will only get, maybe won't get any of the employer contribution. If I'm there 2 years, maybe 10%, 3 years, 20% through maybe year six. The vesting schedule will tell you how long you've been at the employer, will determine how much you'll get of the employer's share of the contributions. So that's the vesting. And that comes into play for any number of retirement benefits. It could be the 401k, it could be stock options, it could be stock awards. So there's typically a vesting schedule, and that's what you want to make sure you understand as well. Because what if you are thinking about quitting and you know, you stay five more days and you hit another landmark in your years of service that will help you vest better. So you want to watch that and watch your dates and keep track of those. So that's vesting. I also want to mention quickly with pensions, you always want to be careful when it's time to make a decision on a pension. If you are someone, one of the lucky few who have available a defined benefit pension, what we are seeing more and more are employers offering lump sum payouts. So what they say is, hey, you retiree, before you've chosen it, you know, you haven't retired yet, you can take X amount of dollars per month, and if you take it on just your life, it's going to be higher. If you want a survivor benefit for your spouse of 50%, it's going to be a little lower. If you want a survivor benefit for your spouse of 100%, it's going to be a little lower. And that kind of will factor out over some life expectancy factor that they've used for your life. And when they back into what the value of that is today, that's called the present value of that future stream of money, they're going to come up with a lump sum option in some cases where they'll say, instead of us paying you that money every month for the rest of your life, because it might not be to their advantage if you end up living 20 years longer than your life expectancy, they might want to take the risk and say, we're going to pay you out everything now. So they're going to come up with some lump sum amount. And that's calculated based on all kinds of criteria by the government, based on longevity, the life expectancy, and certain interest rate factors. And, of course, what kind of accumulated benefit you will have. So they go through these calculations and say, which one do you want? Which one do you want? And you have to then decide how that looks to you. So if you're someone who has super longevity in your family, you might say, well, I'm going to live till 90, and the life expectancy tables say I'm only going to live to, you know, 80, then it might be a better benefit for you to wait. If the interest rates are super, super low, that might result in a higher benefit today. That might be one of your considerations. There are probably about 12 factors that you're going to have to go through when you're trying to weigh the pros and cons of a lump sum versus a monthly pension. It takes some extra analysis. Make sure you work with someone who can help you go through it. You have to factor in, you know, survivor needs, cash flow needs, the credit quality of the company. Do you expect that there's still going to be a pension there? Many, many factors. Be aware of it. Don't make any quick assumptions. Think it through. Be proactive, not reactive. So that's talking about pensions, lump sum options. When we talk about the importance of knowing in your plan whether you did all of your contributions pre-tax or if you might have some after-tax contributions in there, again, why that is so important is if you have after-tax contributions in your 401k, now the IRS has confirmed that you can roll the after-tax amounts into a Roth IRA when you go to retire and take the monies out. If you don't pay attention to that and you roll over the whole account, the after-tax monies will also roll into an IRA. Typically, when someone retires, they roll their 401k into a self-directed rollover IRA that they can manage themselves. So when they do this, if you roll over the after-tax money, then that IRA account will always have a little piece of after-tax money in it, and it complicates the taxation on the future distributions. So if I have $10,000 of after-tax money in a $100,000 401k, and I roll the whole $100,000 over into an IRA, 10% of my money is after-tax money. I have a $10,000 cost basis. Now, if I go to take out $1,000 of my IRA, not the whole $1,000 is taxable. It's $90,000 over $100,000 times $1,000, $900 is taxable. And you have to redo that calculation every single year. It's just a pain. And now that they've made it so easy to roll after-tax money into a Roth, you'd put the after-tax money into a Roth, now that can grow tax-free indefinitely. There's no required minimum distributions on a Roth. There are required minimum distributions on your IRA. So you really, really need to know that. You also need to know about ESOPs, employer stock ownership plans, and what your cost basis is in that, because there's something called net unrealized appreciation, which can have huge tax advantages. We did have a call come in from Bob in Allentown, and he asked, What is the trade-off from an IRA or 401k to deferred variable annuity? The pros and cons of the move. Bob, what I would say is there's so many facets to this that I don't think I'm going to be able to cover it in the 2 minutes or 3 minutes that I have here, but let me just mention some guidelines or some parameters around this. You said trade-off from an IRA or a 401k. The difference between a rollover IRA and a 401k might be the investment options available to you. So the 401ks are employer-sponsored retirement plans, and you may have just a menu of investment options to choose from, whereas a rollover IRA, you may have, 12,000 investment options to choose from. So that's kind of the pros and cons of an IRA, rollover IRA versus 401k, meaning when we retire, sometimes people will roll their 401k over into an IRA, self-directed IRA. If I am currently employed and I have a 401k, but my income is such low enough that I can also do an IRA, I can do a traditional IRA contribution if that's what you're talking about. That is sometimes a little harder if you have a 401k, because when you're employed, you may not be able to do the traditional IRA because there's income limits and thresholds on that. And you can't do as much. You can put, if you're over 50, you can put $24,000 into the 401k. And the IRA is something like $6,000 or $6,500 if you're over 50. So you can put a lot more away in a 401k. So that's a little bit of the difference between a 401k, traditional IRA, or if you roll the 401k over to a rollover IRA, it's investment options. You always want to review the cost, the underlying cost of the funds that you're using as well. Now, you also asked about a deferred variable annuity. One thing about IRAs and 401ks and annuities, it's all ordinary income. So when that money comes out of an IRA or a 401k or an annuity, it's all going to be ordinary income when it comes out. So people can have an annuity whether it's in an IRA or not. If it's not in an IRA, then it's just the growth or earnings on the annuity that will come out income taxable. There's no step up in basis at death. There's no favorable capital gains tax rates or qualified dividends in an annuity. So that's for non-retirement. If someone uses some of their IRA money to go into an annuity, it's still all both are ordinary income, so that's the same. In your IRA, you could go into mutual funds or different investments, just like a variable annuity might. So both of those might give you exposure to the markets. What might happen in a variable annuity is there may be features in it that will provide some guarantees, but typically you're paying for those. So that is something I'm not going to talk about on the air. You'd have to talk with an advisor who's licensed to sell them and understand all the bells and whistles that are available. They're complicated. You have to make sure that it's explained to you properly. And there's all kinds of compliance around these now because it was deemed that some of these products can be a little bit more complicated and people might be trying to sell them and not explain them to the extent needed. So, for example, an annuity may have a surrender period that you may not be able to access all the money. Sometimes you can take a little bit out each year, but typically there might be a surrender period where you will get penalized if you take it out sooner than, let's say, it's like a 5-year annuity or a 7-year annuity. You might not have that in the mutual fund. Okay, so you have to understand all the features and compare apples to apples, because these are apples and oranges. So you want to make sure you understand. I hope that helped, Bob. I know you were off air, so I hope that helped enough, give you a little bit of guidance around that. So folks, I realize as I was talking about this topic, how complicated it is. And I went back and looked to see if I've talked about retirement plans in particular on past shows, and I hadn't, that I could find, at least recently. I kind of looked the last couple of years. I'm like, oh, when was the last time I talked about retirement accounts? And I really didn't see anything, and I know now why, because there's just way, way, way too much to talk about. I could probably talk about any one of these features as a whole show itself. The idea tonight is to encourage everyone who's listening to understand your own retirement benefits, what is available to you. Make sure you read those employer benefit booklets that they hand out and keep them handy in a drawer so that the day you have to understand what your options are on whatever employer benefit you might have, that you have the right information and it's applicable to your own situation. So I hope that helped. Next week, we're going to talk about IRAs, Roth IRAs, maybe SEP IRAs. I'm thinking I probably should just stick to IRAs and Roth IRAs next week. So we will see what we get. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. But I want to thank Jeff for being here. Thank Lori for being here. And thank you so much to the callers. You're my favorite part. Make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.